Welcome to the Growing in Grace podcast, where you can listen in on some casual conversation about the good news of Jesus without all of the inconsistent religious double talk. If you've ever struggled with feelings of hopelessness, guilt, and despair, or wondered if you're really right with God, it's time to discover the true freedom that comes with the gospel of unlimited and overflowing grace.
The Growing in Grace podcast. I'm Joel, the Breeze Man. They call me the Breeze. Has nothing to do with Leonard Skinner either. And that guy over there is the Gap, Mike Gapler.
Ahoy!
Hey, I didn't call you on the telephone.
We were talking before we came on. Nothing to do with the podcast, really. But back in the day when I used to do a morning show on the radio, I remember a trivia nugget that ahoy was being advocated for as the way to answer the phone instead of hello. Who was it? Was it Thomas Edison or someone else?
It was Alexander Graham Bell. He wanted it to be ahoy when a person ahoy hoy is what I found. He wanted people to say ahoy.
I'm okay with ahoy. I told Joel when I start answering the phone now, I'm going to say ahoy.
Ahoy.
I'm a rebel. I admit it. I'm a rebel. I mean, stop and think about it, Joel. When you eat store-bought cookies, they're not called Chips Hello.
That's true. That's true. And if Thomas Watson would have won out, maybe they would be called Chips Hello. Because he's the one that ended up saying hello is the way to answer the phone. After Alexander Graham Bell wanted it to be ahoy hoy. It was ahoy dash hoy, ahoy hoy. I don't know where that came from, but
yeah, that doesn't sit right with me. Feels like an echo.
Ahoy hoy, ahoy hoy, ahoy hoy, ahoy hoy. Yeah, he's got too much electrical things going on there.
Yeah, maybe it feedback was really just ahoy, but when he did it, you know, live on the phone, because the technology wasn't very good then, maybe it came across as ahoy hoy because of
echo. Yeah.
Hey, happy Easter out there, but I know you got something else you want to talk about.
Well, yeah, a couple things, just real quick here. So when this episode is uploaded, again, you just said it, Easter Day, it will have been a few weeks since we finished our Listeners Speak series, and so I just got a comment today, so again, this is a few weeks before this is actually going to air, but she had just finished listening to that series. It was a six-part series where we had asked listeners to comment on the things that changed, that grace changed in their lives, basically, in short. And she says, I so enjoyed listening to this miniseries, guys. So many of the listener comments are all the same things I experienced, too. I just loved how the Holy Spirit led me to you guys as part of my relearning. Great of you to keep on going. I'm grateful for you both. And a few emojis there. And so that's cool. I mean, that's really, I thought that was a really great series. And I just hearing from people and how grace has transformed and changed people's lives, the things that they used to be caught into in bondage to, legalism and the religion type of things, and how grace has freed them. So that was a six-part series that we finished a few weeks ago. So you can go back to growingingrace.org and check that out. Or, of course, there's a playlist for that on YouTube. And on our YouTube page, Grace Roots is the name of the YouTube page. And you can listen, of course, on a lot of other podcasting apps, too. Another thing, so it is Easter Day, and I just saw this this today. Again, now, as we're recording this is a few weeks before Easter, but CBN News reports that a special 70th anniversary 4K restoration screenings of the 1956 classic The Ten Commandments are appearing in select theaters around the country for the Passover/Easter season. The movie stars Charlton Heston as Moses and Yul Brynner as Pharaoh, and so on and so forth. And we've talked about this before, but it's always been interesting that Easter, where we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus, where they're playing this Ten Commandments movie. I mean, I don't know where else in the year you would fit it in, but it always seems to gain popularity Anyway, I can't believe that movie is 70 years old. 1956.
Crazy.
Yeah. Wow.
I can remember sitting around the TV console. Remember the TVs that had all this wood around them?
Yeah, right.
Like a 25-inch screen was probably pretty big back then. I don't know. And I can remember sitting around with the family watching the Ten Commandments. I mean, it's a true classic. And it has always kind of made me wonder why, of all things, the Ten Commandments, the law around Easter time. I suppose you could... It may have something more to do with Passover.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just interesting, though, because they advertise it as an Easter, you know. I mean, yes, they say Passover. That thing that I just read says Passover, but a lot of times it's due to the Easter season is how it's kind of comes across. But anyway, now you can see it in 4K.
Oh, that's interesting.
Charlton Heston in 4K.
Stop and think. The Ten Commandments that were issued back at Mount Sinai, which kind of what the movie is about, Israel coming out of Egypt, all of that, coming into that covenant. And then here we are at Easter where Jesus ends that covenant.
Yes, right. Yep. And you know, I think it just goes to show that there is a lack of understanding about all of this stuff, about why Jesus came, what he accomplished through the cross. I had posted something on social media that, you know, I was never under the law, and neither were you. As a non-Jewish person, what happened to me in church settings, I was told, you know, that we were under the law, that I had to follow the Ten Commandments and some other laws and rules. But the truth is that the whole 613 commandments, not just the 10, it wasn't just the 10 commandments. The movie's called the Ten Commandments, but there were 603 other commandments. And we were never under those because it was exclusively a covenant between God and Israel. It's in the Bible, Cap, though. It's in the Bible. So as Christians who read the Bible, a lot of people think that we're supposed to keep that. But if you think about it, most people who advocate for, you know, keeping the law, whether it's the Ten Commandments or all, you know, or just the law, we're supposed to keep the law because they'll kind of pick and choose which ones they think we have to keep. But most people don't really even have a clue what's in there. And I also think that if they go back to this law talk, like we're supposed to follow the law, then they are, of course, missing what Christ accomplished through his death and resurrection. I think it's just that's just big in the church today. A lot of people are missing that.
You know, during the Sermon on the Mount, which is that's what we call it anyway, in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, actually. But Jesus was speaking to his Jewish disciples who were still under that Mosaic law. And he said, first he said, do not think that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill, which he did, by the way. But he goes on to say, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men to do so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, it's all about doing, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. And what people don't realize here, so we have these people out there on the legalistic side of the fence, and some who straddle the fence between grace and legalism. And Joel, they'll argue that Jesus said, so it's in the Bible, Jesus said, you know, don't break these commandments and teach others to do them, including yourself, probably. And yet the people who advocate for that, so we have people saying the law can't be completely dissipated because Jesus said, without having an understanding of the context, kind of like what you talked about here a minute ago, was that there's a bigger context that goes way back to when this whole thing started. But then now Jesus is coming along and he's making some of these statements that are often taken, a lot of statements Jesus made, lots of verses taken out of context. And so we got these people who will say, see, we should be advocates for the law. And I think they have no idea what they're saying because there's over 16, or I'm sorry, there's over 600, around 613 laws, rules, statutes, commandments from that law. It's not just the top 10. So Joel, the only thing I can sort of assume here is that when people try to come to the defense of the law, they're just thinking of the 10 commandments, and that we should, you know, advocate for those, and do those and try our best and teach others to do the same. But Jesus is speaking about the entire law, the entire package. You know, people go to seminary and they come walking out being told, and they believe it, that the law was broken up into different categories and that some of the categories disappeared, came to an end. Other categories, the moral law, is still supposed to be in place. But the whole thing either had to come to an end or the whole thing has to remain in place. And the other caveat here is that we, as non-Jewish people, were never under it. So you and I, we never died to the law. We never were freed from the law. We never had to be. I know we have modernized religious law and different things from different churches that people will try to apply to their Christianity. But it's not the Bible law. It's not the Mosaic law. It's just a little hodgepodge of this and that from the law into a Christian ideology. And yes, it's legalism, but it's not the Mosaic law. So people who are advocating for the Mosaic law, they have no idea what's in there. I mean, I had a lady one time jump all over me about it. And we had a private conversation, and I asked her, I said, do you leave your house at a certain time of the month?
Right.
she had no idea what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. But that was a no-no under the law for women. There's a lot of stuff in there that gets a little bit R-rated sometimes. But
yeah, that's true. There's a lot of stuff in there that people that would shock people if you, like you say, you just asked that point-blank question. There are so many things in there that if you would ask people, even some things that aren't really necessarily shocking, but just like, do you wear clothes of mixed linen and wool? Are you a man and do you shave and disfigure the sides of your face? That's the law. And right next to those are other laws that people say that we're supposed to keep, but they ignore those. And you should not make markings on your skin, you know, tattoos and all that stuff. Not even seeing the context there that it didn't really have to do with just regular tattoos, but it had to do with other things. But people don't really know, you know, they say, yes, we need to be under the law. We need to, we believe, yes, and it's great that we believe Christ, but we also have to keep the law because, again, like you said, because of what Jesus said, or for whatever reason, they get this idea that it's in the Bible, so we have to keep it, but they don't even really know what is in all of those 613 laws. Because you could name, if you could just say stuff like, not even say, don't even tell people I'm telling you what is in the law, but say something that's from the law, and they'll be oblivious to it. They won't have a clue that that's actually part of the law. Well, we don't need to keep that. Well, that's part of the law. And so they just don't understand that. And so, you know, not understanding, you know, having this limited view of the law, they kind of are able to, in their own minds, water it down. They're presenting, they don't realize this, but they're presenting a watered-down version of law when they don't really have a clue what's actually in the law. You know, if you're going to be, quote, under the law, it's not just certain rules and regulations, but you are obligating yourself to keep all 613 laws that are under that old covenant. And the good news for us in Christ, then, of course, is that through Christ's death and resurrection, through his death, here's what happened. You know, we're talking about Easter. You know, Jesus Christ was on the cross, and then he rose again from the dead. Well, one of the things that happened through his death is that that old covenant law was abolished. And I know people are saying, but Jesus said, I did not come to abolish the law or the prophets. I did not come to abolish, but I came, or to destroy it, but I came to fulfill it. And the truth of the matter is that he was not lying. He did come to fulfill the law. If he would have come to destroy the law or to abolish the law, then he couldn't have fulfilled it. He had to, in order to fulfill the law, how do you fulfill something that's been abolished? And so he did fulfill it because it was fully intact when he was walking on the earth and ministering to people. He was preaching and teaching the law, and then he did fulfill it. And then what happened? This is where it gets interesting. This is where the dividing line is. And Ephesians 2, Paul brings this out in Ephesians 2 and in Colossians 2. After Jesus died, here's what happened. In Ephesians 2, we can start maybe in verse 11 or so. Therefore, remember that you, once Gentiles in the flesh, who are called uncircumcision by what is called a circumcision made by hands in the flesh. In other words, who are called uncircumcision by the Jews who were circumcised. It was a fleshly, bodily circumcision. At that time, you were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world, but now in Christ Jesus, you who were once far off, the Gentiles, have been brought near by the blood of Christ. Again, had nothing to do with the law, but here's where the law came in. For he himself is our peace, verse 14, who has made both one, that's Jews and Gentiles, and has broken down the middle wall of separation. What was that middle wall of separation that he's talking about? It was the law. Having abolished in his flesh, this is Christ, having abolished in his flesh the enmity, that is, the law of commandments contained in ordinances, so as to create in himself one new man from the two, thus making peace. So that there was this enmity, there was this middle wall of separation between the Jews and the Gentiles, and it was the law. It was the law, and Jesus abolished it. That was through his death, so he could reconcile both Jews and Gentiles to God in one body. So Jesus didn't come to abolish it himself because he had to fulfill it. But then once it was fulfilled, it was all done. He said, it is finished. Then it was abolished and done away with. Colossians 2 also talks about that.
Yeah, so this law that God brought a covenant to the Israelites with, exclusively to them, the nation of Israel, not to Gentiles who were outside of that group. The whole point of that law within that covenant was that people could not do it. Now, the Jews thought they could. They agreed to it. That's what a covenant is about. Again, you can't have a covenant without two or more parties agreeing upon it. And they agreed. They thought it would be righteousness to them. They thought by hearing it and doing it, that's what the whole point of the law was, to hear it, to do it. And by accomplishing that task, they thought that it would bring righteousness to them. So they were ready to roll up their sleeves and clench their fists and go at it. Of course, nobody ever did it. Nobody ever kept it. And the purpose of that law was to show that nobody could get there on their own. This whole thing really started with Adam. Not the Mosaic law, but the concept that a man could do something to make himself more acceptable to God, to be more like him. And now here we are with Jesus coming along. As you said, Joel, he took that law that divided these two groups, the Jews, probably less than 1% of the world, and the rest of the world, the Gentiles. And he tore it down and brought the two groups together. Remember what Paul said in Galatians 4, when the fullness of time had come, God sent forth his son, born of a woman. He was born under the law, Jesus was, so that he might redeem those who were under that law. And so what does it mean to redeem them? I mean, it means to rescue, to like buy away like a ransom. You know, it's like the law was holding the Jewish people ransom, and Jesus paid it. And set them free. He redeemed them. And by doing that, and by tearing down that wall of commandments, it now allowed the two groups to come together, because the Gentiles had no covenant, the Gentiles had no hope, and the Jews really didn't have much either, even though they were in a covenant. with that law, they couldn't keep it. They couldn't meet the standard. They couldn't meet the demands that were required to attain the righteous perfection that was needed before a holy God. And so Jesus took all of that away and brought the two together. And when you think about Galatians chapter 2, when Paul said, I have been crucified with Christ, it is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. The life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me, gave himself for me, and therefore I do not set aside the grace of God. For if righteousness comes through the law, then Christ died in vain, or Christ died needlessly. Christ died for nothing. And that's the whole point. So when we talk about and focus at this time of the year, especially, I guess, in the church world, on the death and resurrection of Jesus, it comes down to really kind of one simple thing. You and I can't do it. Jesus finished the job. If Jesus did not finish the job, then that means that our eternity, our redemption, is still based upon something that we need to do to secure it. And that is not a place of blessed assurance, is it?
This has been Growing in Grace with Mike Kapler and Joel Brzezicki, heard online through various internet sources around the world each week. Access past programs by visiting growingingrace.org. Share it with a friend and listen again next week for more Growing in Grace.